Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the historic Tom Jackson Building on the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Natural disasters and man-made disasters get extensive media coverage since the dawn of the 24/7 news cycle. Well, beginning this fall, there will be a new class at MTSU in the College of Mass Communication, cross-listed for both the School of Journalism and the Department of Electronic Media Communication, on learning how to deal with a crisis as a manager and a public relations practitioner. The lady who's going to teach the class is Dr. Carrie Greenwood, who is an assistant professor in the School of Journalism, and we'll return in just a moment after these non-emergency related words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. Job growth in Tennessee accelerated during the first quarter of 2013, according to a report from MTSU's Business and Economic Research Center. Dr. David Pan, director of the center, says employers added 20,000 non-farm jobs from the previous quarter. The Tennessee Public Health Association has bestowed a high honor on Dr. Martha Jo Edwards, director of MTSU's Center for Health and Human Services. The THPA gave her its 2013 Visionary Award on April 19th for her efforts to extend the borders and scope of traditional public health. And MTSU's Confucius Institute is hosting a Chinese language and culture summer camp June 10th through the 14th in room 106 of Pack Hall. Activities include formal language lessons in basic vocabulary and conversation. For MTSU News at any time, go to mtsunews.com.
Carrie, your first time on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jenna. I'm delighted to be here.
Did you teach this particular course anywhere else where you have been an educator?
No, I haven't taught the course. I have 30-plus years in public relations, and I have been a crisis communicator my entire career. So that was really the genesis of the course, is my own personal experience.
And you got a crash course in crisis communications yourself right out of college when you were working at a radio station in, ironically, Moore, Oklahoma.
That's correct. Yes, I have a journalism degree, undergraduate degree from the University of Oklahoma. And my first job was with KOMA, Moore, Oklahoma. And my first time on the air with KOMA actually was during a tornado at the KOMA station, and which was a cinder block building and which had a basement. It was the tornado shelter for the entire community. And I was reading news, but my job became, as the tornado approached, really to warn residents and broadcast take cover. And they did. They were coming into the station while the engineer and I monitored the news.
And what resources did you have at your disposal, if any?
Well, we had a scanner and the AP ticker. And that was about it.
Yeah, no National Weather Service radio back then.
No, not then. Uh-huh. No, that's been a while.
So you know what this is like, both from the broadcaster's point of view and from the public information officer's point of view.
I do indeed. I have been a corporate public relations supervisor, a corporate communications supervisor with a Fortune 500 company in which I dealt with a variety of natural disasters. I've also been the public affairs director for a natural resource agency at the state level in which I dealt with a number of disasters. So disaster planning, crisis communication has really been part of my career.
Is there a template for handling this situation if you're a PIO in which certain standards apply regardless of what the type of crisis is, or do you have to apply a certain amount of innovation as you go depending upon the different circumstances of a crisis?
Those are good questions, and the answer would be yes and yes, because there are templates, and I think many public relations officials develop their own, but they have a commonality. And then from the standpoint of being able to innovate, once you have that framework, then the innovation really becomes somewhat site-specific or situation-specific, but you're operating within a framework. Probably the most restrictive and a standardized framework being the incident command system in which I was trained as a fire information officer.
Is that in which you set up a base from which to perform all of your PIO functions?
Exactly, yes. And that situation is prescribed in terms of job duties. There is a national, you know, sort of standardization of that process. It's used at the federal level. The federal government uses it. State governments, local governments use it. So when you mention ICS or Incident Command System in those settings, people know, and they are trained in their own job duties. So you might have a job as a public information officer during the day, and on a fire or a natural disaster crisis, you might be in some other field. Typically, that's not the case in our profession, but if you were in operations, for instance, in the organization, you might be in supply, you might be any number of other things. So people's jobs turn upside down in that, but you're trained in it, you know exactly what your duties are.
And in the incident command structure, that's for a situation I would imagine which you anticipate is going to extend over quite some period of time, not something that is going to be handled within a matter of mere hours. You're talking about days or possibly even weeks, right?
It could be that long, yes. It could be longer than that. And that requires mobilizing resources, obviously. So the agency for which I worked was a fire agency, so among other things. So they had responsibility for fire protection on state and to some degree federal lands, and they also offered their services to other agencies. And so this was a situation where this was a structure that was in place for fighting fire, and part of that structure was information. And so my job as the public affairs director was to learn to be a fire information officer, even though I had many years of experience in crisis in the private sector and elsewhere. I was trained from the ground floor up, so I went out as, you know, a lonely bag carrier answering the telephones, etc., and watched the entire structure, and I went to multiple fires and moved up the chain of command that way.
So it's important for, in a crisis, for a public information officer to understand what each person's role is, to understand the various pressures and concerns impinging on everyone from the fire chief to the police officer to the paramedics, everybody.
Absolutely. You have to understand the entire scenario in order to play your role and be able to assist. I attended several fires. I also was called into play, as was my team, for the New Carissa grounding at Coos Bay, Oregon, in February of 1999. And this was, when you say something that might play out over a few weeks or so, this played out ultimately over about 10 years before the hulk was finally removed from the shoreline in Oregon. But the immediate process was weeks. And I was simply minding my own business in my public affairs office at the forestry agency when a friend called whose agency had jurisdiction over this disaster and asked if I could go and take my team with me. And we were deployed by our agency, and we drove to Coos Bay, and we basically were plugged into that national level incident command system. It was called a JAG, Joint Incident Command, JIG, which was basically the state of Oregon, the Coast Guard, and the ship owner. And so we played various roles. One of my experiences was driving a Ford Explorer full of reporters from all over the country to the shipwreck site through deep sand. It was my first time driving a four-wheel drive, so that was exciting for all of us. Mm-hmm. But we were there. My job was to get them there in time for a napalm drop from a helicopter.
Oy.
Yes. So it was an exciting time. It was a difficult time for the community. I ultimately wrote the community relations plan for that area. But it was basically fitting in where best you could in that situation.
How do you define the word crisis for purposes of this course? Could it, in addition to man-made disasters and natural disasters, could it take into account things like corporate scandals, government scandals?
Absolutely. And I think the key thing that I would like to impress upon students is that it isn't just public relations that has to be prepared, but often it is public relations that has to be the most prepared in a corporate or organizational setting. It tends to fall to us to anticipate what could happen to the organization, and what can happen depends on the type of organization, the location, the stakeholders, whether or not you're producing a product, whether you're delivering a service. You have to know your organization. So the key to all of it is planning. That's built into the incident command system. It should be built into all public relations and corporate communications functions. You have to plan for a crisis, because it could be anything.
And that doesn't just mean planning on paper, but doing tabletop run-throughs and doing dry runs in which you actually are physically manipulating things and telling people where to go.
It does. And it does. And the amount of resources that any given organization is willing to commit varies, as you can imagine. I have been involved in various tabletop exercises. We've had dry runs of various kinds of things. A lot of times it's just the plan, and then the plan may be sitting on a shelf for a while until it is dusted off and put into play, and that's a bad situation, because a lot of the planning involves personnel and involves ways to contact personnel, phone numbers change, etc. Among the many plans that I have developed was the Y2K crisis plan for the agency, the forestry agency I worked for. That was a difficult plan to create because a lot of people didn't think there was much to it. Okay, so they didn't give it credence. As it turned out, they were right, but one never knows. And so it involved as much planning as anything else. And fortunately, we didn't have to implement it, but we did, basically try to keep it updated because it had a lot of bearing on other kinds of emergencies.
We'll be right back with more on MTSU on the Record in just a moment.
The Tennessee Civil War National Heritage Area is managed by MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation. A partnership unit of the National Park Service, the Heritage Area tells the whole story of America's greatest challenge, offering assistance with Civil War and Reconstruction era programs. Our projects include historic driving tours, museum exhibits, and nominations to the National Register of Historic Places. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about a new class in crisis communication that will be offered this fall here at MTSU. It'll be taught by Dr. Carrie A. Greenwood, who is an assistant professor in the School of Journalism. Here's a very simple yet complex question. How do you prevent unauthorized leaks?
That's a challenge, obviously. The situation is such that you need to have everyone on board in terms of how information is handled. You can't, in this age of transparency and instantaneous communication, there is no way. So you really have to be prepared for information that you wouldn't like to have out going out. But the whole point of the planning is to anticipate those kinds of things. And so you would look to bringing your staff into play, basically bringing them on board in terms of what is and isn't appropriate, but you have to be prepared that information may get out that you would prefer not to deal with at this time. I guess I would use, I don't know if it would be considered a leak or if it was just enthusiastic reporting or what it might have been, but in the very tragic situation that we just had it in Moore, and I might mention I am from Oklahoma, so that really does strike home to me. There were early reports of a much higher death toll. And you might ask how that could happen. At this point, I don't know, but I do suspect that the agencies involved will be looking at how they handled information and whether or not information was presented prior to its really being validated for accuracy. When I was at the New Carissa, for example, one of the key pieces of information reporters wanted was how much oil is in the hold, because this was an empty cargo ship on its way, on its way to the Coos Bay Harbor to be filled with wood chips, but it still had oil in the hold. And the media was somewhat frustrated, as was the local community, because the Coast Guard could not and would not initially give them a number. And there were two, I think, briefings a day hosted by the Coast Guard, information briefings for the media. And they held off giving a number for quite a period of time. And the reason was they couldn't be sure, they were trying to find ways to, based on the manifest, identify how much had been there and validate that, verify that through various measurements. That was a key piece of information. Ultimately, oil did seep onto the beaches. Ultimately, it was not the Exxon Valdez, but there was damage, you know, environmental damage to snowy plover nesting sites and that sort of thing. So there was damage, and the media had a legitimate right and interest in knowing, and the Coast Guard wasn't sure, and they did hold off on those numbers. So I don't know what the situation was in Oklahoma. Thankfully, the number went down. But when the media is trying to get that information and the public is demanding that information, sometimes it's not released because the numbers can't be validated.
Can you cite some examples that have made national news in which a crisis situation was handled to you in your mind with great professionalism, and another example in which it was handled with abysmal unprofessionalism?
That's a little, that's a tricky one. There are lots of crises out there, and I think, as I'm looking back through the memory banks, I'm thinking that probably the Tylenol situation was handled pretty well. I think that the situation there was that they didn't really know what was going on, mm-hmm. but they pulled the product.
This is several years ago. It's been held up as the paradigm of good PR when Johnson & Johnson had a scare. There was some tainted Tylenol, and they had to find out what was happening in their factories, and the president of Johnson & Johnson made commercials himself, became mm-hmm. the face of the company, mm-hmm. and they bought spots on national network television to try to explain that, you know, we are trying to deal with this and we do care about your safety. And that's like one of the main reasons why we now have caps that are difficult to get off mm-hmm. and little blister pieces of paper that we have to get through in order to get to our tablets, our pills, but something good came out of it.
It did, and they did take the right approach. They basically did not know what had caused this. Some people did die from this, the tainting. Ultimately, they went in and did the right things, just not for a PR perspective, but because it was the right thing to do. I would say one example of a very poor handling of a crisis situation was the Carnival ship.
Yes.
And that, I would say, was handled poorly from the beginning, virtually to the end. It was perhaps the worst example I've seen in that, and it's interesting because students in a case studies class I was teaching at the time had to pick a real-life crisis, and one team picked that crisis, and they were following it as it unfolded, and there never was a way that they could say this was handled appropriately. The parent company more or less distanced itself from the subsidiary. The subsidiary officers basically pushed the responsibility down as far as they could. The captain ultimately, as we recall, jumped ship, and he made some comments. The person that they had initially speaking did not address issues very well. They really did not, as far as I'm concerned, handle that in a forthright and forthcoming manner.
I'll mention one that I think was really poor. I'll stick my neck out. But not too far, because at the time of the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, mm-hmm. the British public relations person for what used to be called British Petroleum, I think, was asked by a reporter if he thought the crisis would end soon, and he said, "I hope so, because I'd like to get back to my life."
Yes,
the last thing that you can afford to be if you're a corporate public relations person is callous to the feelings of the people being affected by the crisis going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was appalling. That was another situation that a different team in that same class took on and tried to come up with ways that BP could move forward in dealing with the Gulf Coast. And they felt, actually, and I agreed with them, that the spokesperson BP put forward later, a woman from that area, was an effective spokesperson, and that they were apparently genuinely trying to become better stewards in that area.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record in just a moment.
The Intercultural and Diversity Affairs Center helps to promote awareness and understanding of the wide variety of cultures represented at MTSU. The center provides information, referrals, and resources. Additionally, IDAC tries to make students from different cultures feel welcome and comfortable on campus so they can have every opportunity to fulfill their academic, social, and personal potential. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Carrie A. Greenwood, assistant professor in the School of Journalism, about the new class that she will be teaching in the fall on crisis communication. Talk about a little bit about the legal aspects of crisis communication in terms of what a spokesperson can and cannot say. For example, I think with regard to a hospital spokesperson about the when one is asked about the health status, so the particular medical details of, let's say, a famous person who has been hospitalized there, that kind of thing. There are certain privacy laws that you have to understand if you're a hospital spokesperson.
It depends on the industry that you're operating in. The procedures that we teach and that we employ involve basically creating the plan. The plan involves personnel and it involves procedures. And the procedures always are to vet information through the chain of command. So the hospital or any other spokesperson is really not ad-libbing in that situation. That person is speaking from, or at least within, pre-approved guidelines because there are legal ramifications of a variety of natures. It could be that there's an ongoing investigation. I was involved in a situation with a utility many years ago in which a number of people were killed on a utility facility. And the question became, was it negligence on the part of the individuals or negligence on the part of the utility? And it was a situation in which an investigation was immediately initiated at the organization level and immediately initiated at the federal level.
What kinds of questions do you think that the students you're going to be teaching should ask themselves to try to find out whether or not this is really the kind of business they want to go into?
That's a good question, because I have had students tell me when we get to this phase in other classes I've taught, I can't do that. I can't be on call 24/7. I want to have a life. I can't anticipate being held to long hours and being interrupted at all times of the day and night. I can't do that. It's not in my makeup to want to deal with crises, whereas others relish it, welcome it. I don't think anybody welcomes disaster per se, but the ability to help is often a motivating factor, and the belief that someone can help brings them to that line of work. So it is something that we hope we introduce them to in our earlier classes, particularly our public relations communication class, where they have an opportunity to see what media relations is like. And media relations is often ongoing crisis communication, because typically the media isn't interested in your organization unless there's something going on, whether it be an immediate emergency or something that's long-term that's brewing. But anytime the media is interested, you can assume that there's an issue, if not a major problem. And so people who deal with media and in the field of media relations have to have a certain disposition and temperament and be able to interact effectively both with the media, with the public, and with the higher echelons in the organization. So I think that students, I would hope that some students self-select even outside the field of public relations.
But this is a course that will serve students who are going into the public relations field well, even if they ultimately go to work for a company or an agency or some sort of nonprofit entity that does not deal with crises as frequently as the firefighters and the police, because they will have the training to know what to do in the event stuff happens.
Absolutely. I want to draw one more example from the case studies class that had BP, and it had the Carnival Cruise Line ship, the Kony 2012 was a case study that another team took. And when they took it, they thought they were taking the most benign, the most positive nonprofit that would be attractive to college students. They thought it was going to be an easy ride, I think. And they saw this unfold, this drama and tragedy unfold before their eyes during the course of the term, and I think they rewrote their plan probably three times because of the events that transpired, and they never would have anticipated it. I'm sure they wouldn't have taken that on had they known what they were going to be dealing with. You can't go into this field without being prepared for crisis. It's an essential part of the training. We approach this currently through our case studies class, and that's an excellent foundation grounding for going into the hands-on aspects of crisis communication, because we show you what other organizations have done and help you analyze their thinking through the process, the planning that went into it or not. Sometimes it's crises, sometimes it's campaigns. It's hard to say what we might have taken on that term, but many times it's crisis because so often it happens. It doesn't really matter what field we're in, but we are a staff function. We're not a line function. We don't produce widgets. We're a cost center, but in most cases, most organizations feel that it's well worth the cost because of the preparation and planning and assistance we can provide.
We'll take one more short break. We'll be right back with MTSU on the Record in just a moment.
The Experiential Learning Scholars Program at MTSU gives students a chance to go outside the classroom and obtain hands-on experience in their chosen fields of study. They'll have the opportunity to give something back to the community through service learning as they gain acceptance for graduate study. Students should be able to select EXL-designated courses from major requirements and general studies requirements to complete the 16 to 18 hours of EXL coursework. For all of the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
In our final moments with Dr. Carrie A. Greenwood, who will be teaching a class on crisis communication here at MTSU in the fall, this is listed as Journalism 4800, and it's also listed as EMC, which is Electronic Media Communication 4800. So this is an undergraduate course. For, you know, 3 credit hours, just like most of our courses, full-time courses here are here at MTSU, and it's going to meet Mondays and Wednesdays from 12:40 to 2:05 p.m. in room 228 of the John Bragg Mass Communication Building. So anybody who is interested in taking the course and they want to find out more information, how do they get in touch with you?
I would be happy to have them call me. So my number is 494-7748, or I'm online. My email address is carry.greenwood, just the way it sounds, at mtsu.edu. I'd be happy to talk to anyone who would be interested in this, and I'm really hoping we can draw from across the campus. This is a senior-level course. I anticipate our military veterans, or even those in our military department, if they have the opportunity to take electives, could benefit from this. I would love to have some former information officers from the military or from any other service or field. Would like to have business majors attend, because we're looking at this also from the management perspective. I'm looking forward to having not just EMC, or electronic media communication students, and public relations students, but any students on this campus who feel that their organization or their career path might benefit from this experience.
It sounds like it's going to be fun.
It will be a blast.
Carrie Greenwood, I wish you a crisis-free course.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.